Okay. Tonight's call is with Melissa Mantak. Melissa was a former professional triathlete for 6 years. During that time, she achieved numerous podium finishes at the World Cup level. In 1992, she placed third at the World Cup Championships in Canada, capturing the overall World Cup title. That same year, she was voted Triathlete of the Year by the U.S. Olympic Committee. In 1993, she added to an impressive list of accomplishments by winning the first ITU Indoor World Championship title. Today, she is a coach. She's currently certified as a Level 3 USA Triathlon coach and a Level 1 USA Cycling coach, and those are both the highest certifications in those organizations. She is also a performance enhancement specialist certified by the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And in 2007, Melissa started working as a head coach with the U.S. triathlon team at World Cup races in the ITU. So with that, and oh, not only that, Melissa is also my coach. I've been harping that I think coaching is important. She's been my coach for a while now, so I just wanted to throw that in there too. And with that, I welcome Melissa Mantak to the call.
Thank you, Carrie. It's been a pleasure working with you for so many years now.
It's been a while. We've definitely known each other for a long time, so it's been a good ride. So, So with that, we're going to talk a little bit more about short course racing, Olympic distance and sprint distance and things like that in ITU. And so first question I got for you, Melissa, is why don't you explain a little about what exactly is ITU racing?
Well, first of all, I'd like to talk just a little bit about what the ITU is. I don't know that many people really know about the ITU. It's the International Triathlon Union, and it's the international governing body of triathlon. Just like USA Triathlon is a national governing body of triathlon, the ITU takes care of triathlon on the world championship and Olympic level. At its most basic, the ITU is the feeder for Olympic triathlon. That's kind of the biggest goal that they have and the work that they do. They also run age group world championships in the short course and long course. They run, the Olympics, Pan Am Games, Commonwealth Games, World Cups, ITU Continental Cups, regional championships. And now this year they've got a new world championship series along with the World Cup series, and these are premium World Cups, bigger fields, bigger prize purses that all feed into the world championships. In 1989 was the first World Championships that the ITU officially held in the Olympic distance. Then 1994 was their first draft legal triathlon in Osaka, Japan, which I competed in. It was a great, great race. So then what is ITU racing? ITU racing is, it's still triathlon. A triathlon is a really pretty small sport, but we have a lot of different slots and different focuses in triathlon. We've got the short course sprints, we've got the Olympic distance, we've got the ITU racing, of course, the half iron and Ironman distances. So there's a big spectrum of types of racing and distances of racing. The ITU racing, the biggest difference with the ITU racing is the draft legal format on the bike. And the other difference is that it's a criterium style race. So on the swim, most of the time, athletes will dive off a pontoon and they'll do two loops. So they'll do half the swim and then they get out of the water and then dive back in, which is also a format that's become popular in some of the Ironman races. Makes it much more spectator friendly. And then on the bike, they also do loops, usually 6 to 8 loops on a course. It's still 40 kilometers, still the regular Olympic distance. And then on the run, they also usually do that as a criterium-style race. Again, it makes it a little more spectator-friendly. You can kind of stand in one place and see a lot of action.
Cool. Awesome. That is good stuff. So what is different about sprint and Olympic distance racing compared to, an iron distance?
I think the biggest difference is the training volume for the Ironman and half Ironman distance is much bigger. The focus is aerobic development and lower intensity. Going out there all day long, you're looking at an event that's anywhere from 8 hours to 17 hours long, versus a sprint or an Olympic distance race where, of course, aerobic development is also key because any event that takes more than a couple of minutes is technically an aerobic event. But in order to go faster at the sprint and Olympic distance, in order to get better over time, it's important to increase your skill, your power, your intensity. So more high-intensity work is important there.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So why don't you explain then what are the differences between training for Olympic versus sprint and, for Olympic and sprint races versus iron races more specifically then?
Okay. The sprint distance, first of all, the sprint distance is 750 meter swim, a 20 kilometer bike, a 5K run. The Olympic distance basically doubles that, 1500 meter swim, 40K bike, and a 10K run. And then we go up to the half Ironman distance. It's an 1,800-meter swim, 56-mile bike, and then a half marathon, 13.1 miles. And then the Ironman is 3,800 meters, 112 miles, and then a full marathon after that. So a lot of people start out in the sprint distance. It's a great place to start out. A lot of people can manage the training and the racing at a sprint distance. It's a minimal time commitment, and it's kind of a way to kind of get your foot wet and get your foot in the door and see if you like doing it. Then people kind of graduate to the Olympic distance, and then sometimes they'll graduate to the half iron and Ironman distance. I think one kind of unfortunate thing in our sport is that a lot of media attention is paid to the Ironman distance races and the drama and everything that happens in Ironman. And although they're wonderful and challenging events, I think there's a lot more to triathlon, especially in the shorter distances. It's much more accessible for people. So what are the training requirements? Some of the training requirements are speed and skill development. First of all, as I talked about, the aerobic development, that's first and foremost. You need to build your volume, you need to build your endurance up, building that aerobic base and that aerobic capacity. And then from there, building speed, power, skill, especially at the ITU-style racing. There's a lot of skill involved, a lot of power involved. I mean, these kids are racing an all-out 1,500 meters, all-out 40K time trial, and then, in a criterium-style race where you're sprint and go, and then an all-out 10K race. So at the very lowest level, it's an introductory sport, and at the highest level, it's just all out, 100% effort for a couple of hours.
Good deal. All right. And given in the shorter distances, swimming becomes more important. So why don't you talk about how an athlete in the shorter distance triathlons trains specifically for swimming and why it's more important?
Okay, for the swim, it's really important, especially at the ITU level where if you're not there with the swim, then you're not going to make the lead bike path. So the swim becomes very, very critical. And over the years that I've been in triathlon, I've really seen a lot of fast swimmers come into the sport. In previous years, you could be kind of a slow swimmer and still get out and win a World Cup event. And now you have to be a very, very good swimmer. And so in the time trial style events, you can be kind of an average swimmer and be a really strong biker and have a chance at catching the lead bikers and runners. But for swimming, volume is important. Skill is very, very important in swimming. You can't really build your endurance and your strength and your speed unless you have that base of skill level. So skill is very, very important. Working at that threshold level, knowing what your threshold pace is, knowing what your threshold intensity is, knowing what your race pace is. So the ability to really change paces. I find I work with a lot of people who are really good at swimming the same pace for 100 as they are for 1,000 or 1,500 meters. But in order to get faster, you have to be able to train at the higher level. So you have to be able to train above your threshold, doing sprints and very fast events. but you also have to get good at endurance swimming. So swimming a lot of 50s all the time will help you be really great at 50s and help you improve your speed, which is important, but it's also important to do those kind of long middle distance 400s, 500s, 800s, those types of things to get strong as a swimmer. Because open water swimming is, it's very important to be a strong swimmer. You have to have a powerful arm pull and catch. So, again, skill is very, very important there. In the loop style of swimming, whether you're doing an Ironman or an ITU, you also have to train to be able to get up out of the water and run and then dive back into the water, which is challenging of it in and of itself, going from that kind of prone position, standing up, running as fast as you can when you have no blood in your legs, and then diving back in and getting back to swimming. So that's a whole nother challenge to swimming. In fact, and in diving, knowing how to dive in or do the butterfly dives. What are those called? I've lost what it is. Carrie, help me out.
Dolphin dive.
So the swim is very important because it's just a faster event all along. If you only got an hour or 2 hours to compete, you got to be competitive all the way through the event. Whereas if you've got 10 hours to compete, you have the opportunity to make up more time.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, can you just explain to you, a lot of people don't understand why you need to do so much swimming volume in terms of, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, through triathlons, why do you have to swim so much distance in a triathlon for swim training when, you know, you're doing such a short distance, you know,
Right. Well, everybody's going to be a little bit different in their volume needs and abilities. You know, if you've got, you know, only so much time in your day and your week, and you can only swim, you know, for 3 hours, three 1 hour sessions a week, that's about the best that you can do. But at some point, increasing your volume will help to increase your efficiency and your comfort and your feel in the water, your strength, your again, that feel and comfort level in the water. Because in any triathlon, we want to be able to swim as hard as we can for as long as we need to in the event and have that swim take very little out of us so we can get on the bike and get to the run with and still feel really strong so the swim hasn't taken very much out of us. As you get better through your swimming and through any sport, you need the challenge of increasing intensity or increasing volume to continue to improve. Otherwise, you just kind of stay at the same level. Our bodies hit that kind of level of homeostasis, and we get good at what we do all the time. So we need that extra challenge for adding more volume, adding more distance.
Cool. Awesome. Good stuff. Now, also, you know, running off the bike is very important in all the distances, really. But in the shorter distances, you really got to be able to get off and get right into it at a very high pace. So how does one train then to run fast off the bike in a shorter distance race?
Right. Well, I mean, basically, the simple thing is that you run off your bike frequently. The more you practice that skill, the better you get at it. It's very, very uncomfortable at first to go running off your bike because biking and running are not very similar sports. On a bike, you're kind of bent over, your hip flexors are all tightened up, your calf muscles are getting really tight, and then you go to stand up, and your body's like, whoa, what's this? What's going on here? But over time, if you practice that, you do get better at it. So starting with, you know, just a 10-minute run off of an easy bike, an easy run off of an easy bike, and doing that once or twice a week is a great thing to do, especially this time of year. Now is the time of year to start adding those bike run combos in, or bricks. We also call them bricks. So as you get better at it, you want to add more intensity. So go for a hard bike ride and then maybe an easier run or a hard bike ride and then add some time to your run. So instead of 10 minutes, add 20 minutes to 30 minutes, again, depending on the distance goal of your next race. And then, you know, as you continue to improve, you can do a hard bike and then a hard run right afterwards. I used to go out and do all-out intervals on the bike and then go run at the track and do a really hard track workout. And though you can't do a lot of those because it takes a lot out of you, it does help to harden your body and, you know, get used to that, how that feels to bike all-out and then get off and run all-out. So it's all just a matter of time and training. And also remembering that years add up on your training. So what you did last year builds on what you do this year. What you do this year builds on next year. So it does get easier. You do improve. And, it, you know, you get to the point where, you know, it feels good to run off the bike. And, you know, may not believe that they're your first time out, but it does feel good to do that. Another thing that I like to do with people are bike run combos or bike run repeats, so that you do, you get a good warm up on the bike, do a varying intensity on the bike and varying intensity on the run in small repeats. So say do a hard 10-minute bike ride and then get off and do a hard 5-minute run. Take a short break and repeat that several times. And then you can vary that. You know, you can do 5K pace, 10K pace on the runs. You can do half marathon pace, endurance pace. You can add some strides. On the bike, you know, you can do some threshold work, you can do hill intervals, there's so many things that you can do with that. And then you just do these repeats, and, you know, a lot of my athletes think I'm crazy, but they get out there and they feel really, really good on that bike to run transition.
Definitely, definitely. I love those. I do. She makes me do a lot. They work good. They work very good cover each day. So
They're also great for duathletes. Anybody who's doing duathlon, it's a great way to really get used to that bike run, bike run, bike run. It just hardens your body and, you know, gets you into a new comfort level. So when you get to the race, it's like, oh, no big deal, piece of cake here.
Yeah, for sure. They're great. They work awesome. So, all right, let's talk about a little bit of the – actually, Melissa, why don't you tell people about you know, you do clinics and you also coach as well. So why don't you tell people where they can find that information?
My information is, I'm a professional coach. That's what I do full time. I mostly work with triathletes, but I've worked with all different kinds of athletes. And my business name is called The Empowered Athlete. And my website is theempoweredathlete.com or empoweredathlete.com. Either one works. And you can also just Google my name, Melissa Mantak, and you find my website there. And I've got lots of information on the clinics that I do. I do clinics in swimming, open water swimming, bike run training. I've got a new series that I'm doing this year called Running School, teaching people how to run faster, how to run better, how to stay healthy while you're running, how to be strong and fit as a runner. So I was never taught how to run. I don't know how many people were actually taught how to run. We're learning more as adults now. There's a lot more information out there, but there's a lot to running form, running skill, running mechanics, and I love teaching people that, and I love hearing the great stories of how they improve when they improve their running skill. So that's how to get in touch with me, yeah.
Cool, cool. And where are those clinics?
The clinics are all here in the Denver area. I haven't done really any outside the Denver area, but I do work with people one-on-one online and through the phone and through email and all those fun different types of media.
Awesome. Good deal. So you can be reached any way, basically. Good deal.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say I was getting into cycling there for the shorter distances. So why don't we just talk a little bit about some of the differences there and what you need to be good at and how to train for those, basically, with cycling.
Okay. With cycling, I mean, the majority of athletes are going to be doing a time trial type event. But it's also important to train know what intensity you're training at. How do you measure the intensity that you're training at? Do you use a heart rate monitor? Do you use a power meter? Do you use both? Have you gone to a lab and gotten a lactate threshold test? How do you determine how you're measuring your intensity in your training, whether it's on the bike or the run or wherever, but especially on the bike, we need to be able to measure the intensity of training that we're working at. By knowing, you can do simple field tests, 20-minute time trial test, gives you lots of information, and you take those tests and you determine, you know, your heart rate training ranges, your power zone training ranges, and then you, can determine the different types of intensities and intervals based on those ranges and based on the type of racing that you're going to be doing. So again, back to the, this is an aerobic event, so endurance is very, very important, and the off-season base training is very important. this time of the year, hopefully you've got most of your base training down, or maybe you're just starting your base training for an August event or a November event. Make sure you spend plenty of time in that base training. It's very, very important. It's like the foundation of your house. Without the foundation, everything kind of falls apart, and your season lasts about 8 weeks. And then from there, we start to build moderate intensity and kind of a tempo level that builds strength and power, aerobic power, more aerobic power. We're starting to build into a little bit of anaerobic mix in there, but your body can handle it. It's more of that kind of uncomfortable, comfortable range. And then also...
Hello?
Are you there? I'm here. Hello?
Shit.
I'm here, Carrie. I'm here. I can hear you, but you can't hear
Melissa?
Me. I'm here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but you can't hear me.
Hello?
Carrie, I'm here, but you can't hear me.
Oh, I can hear you again.
Okay. I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you again. So, well, where did you leave off when I started saying hello?
I think I was talking about tempo, about a tempo level on the bike.
Okay, yeah, let's. Why don't you just keep going from there then?
Okay, so tempo levels are like a zone 3 heart rate zone, zone 3 power zone, building strength, building that aerobic power, and then you start getting to sub-threshold and threshold work where it's a little bit higher intensity and you want to kind of push that threshold up where you're starting to feel more anaerobic. It's important to be training at threshold and up at VO2 max levels, which is, again, like kind of a zone 5 level where you can only hold on to that intensity for about 3 to 8 minutes. Very important for the ability to time trial in 30-minute to 1-hour type, 1 hour or a little bit more type of events. Very important to train those zones in on your bike. And then also, you know, if you live in a place where there are hills or you can train in the wind, knowing the courses that you're training on helps you to develop what type of training you should be doing. But for the most part, on the run and especially on the bike, in the Olympic and the sprint distance, you want to be training, once you've got that base down, once you've got that tempo down, you want to really be hitting the threshold and the VO2 max levels. Those are the important levels to really help you improve and go faster.
Awesome, good deal. Let's talk a little bit about transitions. Can you tell us why they're important in shorter races, or why they may be more important, and how can someone get better at doing them?
Okay, transitions are key. They're an important part. They're part of your overall time. We don't single out the transition time. So you your overall time, it takes into account the transitions. So if you want to go faster, you must race the transitions. You absolutely must race the transitions. When I was thinking about this question, I remembered a time back in the 80s when I was doing where I was early 90s, I was doing a World Cup, and I was just bound and determined to win this race, and I came out of T2 went into T2 as fast as I could go and came out of it as fast as I could go, and I was with about 4 other women at the time, and I came out ahead of the pack, and there was a girl behind me who we ran the exact same time for that run, but I was 30 seconds ahead of her only because I pushed it that much harder through transition. So I won the race because of my transition. And so having a good transition is really key to racing faster in the short course races. It's important that towards the end of the swim that you're going as fast as you can and you're starting to think about what's going on in your in T1. So you want to come out of that swim running as fast as you can, which requires training. So if you're not comfortable getting out of the swim and then running fast, it's very important to be able to do that. And also taking your gear off in an efficient way where you're taking your goggles off, taking your top off, and running while you're doing this. So as fast as you can do that. So it's important to be able to run fast right out of the swim. And then also knowing your transition spot is very important. If you run into the transition area and you're running around like a chicken with its head cut off, you're going to be losing a lot of time there. So it's important to know where you're going so you get yourself oriented in that transition area before the race starts. So you know where you're going when you come out of the water. You need to be able to get out of that wetsuit really fast. So practicing stripping your wetsuit is very important. The Ironman, they have wetsuit strippers, so they can help you with that. But Olympic distance and sprint distance, you're on your own. You got to really be able to get out of that very, very quickly. Then get your helmet on, and then you're running out of transition again. You need to run with your bike, and so getting out of T1, you need to be able to practice. The fastest way to do it is to leave your shoes on your bike and to be able to do a flying mount. And these are definitely advanced skills, and you want to practice them a lot before you do them in a race. They will save tons and tons of time. Again, I've seen some of my athletes that I work with on this just crush their competition in the transitions because they're doing flying mounts and dismounts, and they practice them a lot before they get into their big race. And then so then you're blast ahead. You really want to get out fast on the bike. Again, this is something you need to practice. For people who are just starting in triathlon, they want to kind of get slow and get into their bike race. But if you want to get faster, you need to be able to blast off on your bike and then get into a rhythm, settle into your race pace. Go through the whole bike, and then as you're getting into T2, you want to practice that flying dismount. So you're taking your shoes off before you even get to the dismount line. And then you hop off, and you're running right off the bike. You're running right back to your transition spot, so you know the flow of the transition area. There's always a specific flow to keep things organized and keep traffic in a safe movement pattern. And so you know exactly where you're going. Then you want to get into, rack your bike efficiently, helmet comes off, and then stretchy laces on your shoes, really important, practicing getting into your shoes quickly. And then you want to blast off out of T1 as fast as you can go. Again, for people who are just starting out, it's kind of hard to go fast right away, and you want to kind of ease into it. But, you know, especially at the ITU level, the national level, you want to be able to race right out of transition as fast as you can. And then you can settle back into your race pace. Oftentimes in the ITU racing, as the men and women are leaving transition, they're running at about a 400-meter pace for that first bit of the transition, just to get out and get a good position on the run. The most important things to think about on for the transition is practice. Practice, practice, practice those transitions. So you get really fast at it. It's second nature. You get into a race and it just all flows very easily for you. So spend some time and take some of your training time and spend time practicing your transitions. Get to the race early enough so that you can really get yourself organized in the transition area, and it will really pay off in shaving time off your overall time. And just, again, racing the transition, very, very important to getting faster there.
Awesome. Good stuff. All right, let's talk a little bit about tactics in shorter races. How do those change versus doing an iron or a half iron distance?
Well, I think that the biggest difference in the shorter races versus the longer races is patience. In the shorter races, you have no time to be patient. Everything is boom, 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 boom. Everything happens very, very quickly, and that's why, you know, you have to have everything organized. Flying through the transition, in and out of transitions, very, very important. So race tactics have to include being very, very efficient at everything that you do. Race tactics also include knowing your race paces. How fast can I go? Can I push harder? What can I do? And a lot of that will come into mental skills training. Sometimes it takes a while for us to learn how to go at that red line. And in an Olympic distance and a sprint distance, if you want to really be competitive, you are redlining from the start to the finish. So in a warm-up is very, very important, very, very key to the short races. So a good warm-up where you do some swimming, some biking, and some running, adding some intensity on the swim, the bike, or run, very important to being able to get off on the start as fast as you can go, because you want to be able to start hard and fast so you can get out there, get a good position, and get on fast legs for the swim. So warm-up, very, very important as part of your race tactics. Again, Olympic distance, you're just redlining it the whole way if you're really, really able to do it. And that takes practice and learning in your training, but also it's good to practice in some races. So before you get to your A priority race, the, you know, big race for your season, practice in some shorter races where that are not as important to you, and practice how hard can I go. Do a race where your goal is to just blow up, see how hard I can go. And very few people actually do blow up. But if you do blow up, then maybe you need to slow down a little bit. If you don't blow up, then you know you can go harder. But for the Ironman distance race, especially, patience is really key. You know, creating a game plan where you've picked your heart rate ranges or your power ranges and sticking to that to the best of your ability, because it's a long day out there. It's a long endurance day out there. And a lot of times race tactics come in just paying off in patience, just more patience in what you're doing there. And I'm also noticing that there's a greater similarity between Olympic distance training racing and half Ironman distance training and racing. Some people may have noticed that a lot of the ITU athletes, somebody like Andy Potts, come off of World Cup racing for many years, and they go right into half Ironman, and they kill everybody. They just crush everybody because they've been doing the volume necessary to do the half Ironman. But they've also had a lot more high-intensity training, which helps them to be a lot stronger and faster than a lot of half-Ironman, Ironman distance racers who are focusing on just a lot of volume, and they're slower racers. So sometimes there's a greater correlation between Olympic distance and half-Ironman versus half-Ironman and Ironman distance, because you can't just necessarily double your half-Ironman time and say, this is what my Ironman time is going to be. That equation doesn't really work there. So the Ironman distance is more of a standalone type of event, very, very special and unique event.
Awesome. Good deal. All right. And so what's a good way for people to figure out their pacing for a shorter race?
Yeah. Sometimes that's a bit of trial and error. Unfortunately, a lot of training is a bit of trial and error. So doing field testing, running 5Ks, running 10Ks, see what you can do for those paces there. Generally, in an Olympic distance, whatever your 10K race pace is, a standalone 10K race pace is, you can generally add about 7% of that time to predict your 10K race time in an Olympic distance triathlon. So practicing what do I think I can do in training is very important. Having some idea of what you're doing in training, and then getting into the race and saying, okay, what do I think I can do here? Am I going to use my heart rate monitor? What kind of guides am I going to use to check my race pace? Am I going to use my GPS, or what am I going to use to check my paces? Or am I just going to go on how my body feels? What does it feel to be like when I'm redlining? What does it feel to be like when I back down a little bit and then I speed up a little bit? So practicing what you think you can do in training is very important. And, with the guidance of a coach, that can be also very, very helpful, because a coach can stand back and say, oh, okay, these are what I'm seeing you do in training. This is what I think you can do in the race. And here are I'm predicting what I think you can do, and here are some targets to handle. Another thing that I like to help people with is different levels of goals that you can achieve in a race. So maybe a lower level goal would be at this pace, or another level goal would be a little bit more of a reaching pace. And then, of course, you also have to take into consideration what the conditions are on race day. Is it really windy? Is it really hot? Those types of conditions will always affect your intensity and your speed and pace. For example, the Ironman triathlon in China just a few weeks ago, it was 113 degrees. The top men normally run about 230s to 240s for their fastest marathon. They do that out in Kona even, where it's very, very hot and humid and windy. But the fastest men's run time was 3 hours and 39 minutes.
Yeah, I saw
that.
That's
how hot.
Yeah.
That's how hot it was. And Rasmus Henning, who won it, or who did that time, is a very, very good runner. So that's just an example of what the race conditions can do to your pace and your time. So another thing that, it works very well for people is going by RPE, or your rate of perceived exertion, in your training and your racing. So how does it feel when I'm doing a 7-minute mile? How does it feel when I'm doing a 6-minute mile? How does it feel when I'm riding my bike at my threshold pace? Because that may not always show in the speed that you're going or the watts that you're putting out or the heart rate that you're putting out on any given day. So RPE is another way to go on figuring out your paces. But again, it's a bit of trial and error. Using some practice races will help, and just giving it a little bit of time to figure out before your big race is a very, very good way to figure out what your race pace will be.
Awesome. Good deal. And then I got one more question for you here, and that is basically about the off season. I think a lot of athletes out there confuse that for taking 3 months off and doing absolutely nothing, and which can hamper your training for the next year quite a bit sometimes. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions also. Like within the taper phase, people think that, oh, it's taper time, that I get to do nothing and drink beer, and okay, then I get ready to race. So that doesn't work. In a taper, there's very specific things that you need to do to have a proper taper and to ensure a great race. But also in the off-season, you're right, there's so much. Think of the off-season as, yes, number one, rejuvenation, recuperation, recovery from the stresses of the season. Very important to take some downtime, but also very important to stay active and start looking at the goals for the next season. What you do in October, November, and December, and January, very, very important for improving and accomplishing your goals for the next season. If you just take 3 months off, you're basically restarting what you just did for the whole season. You lose so much that you're restarting everything. Also, another goal in the off season is to not gain excessive weight. We tend to put on extra weight, and then honestly, you spend the first 2 to 3 months of the season not only improving your fitness but losing weight. And so you're losing all the gains that you had. I mentioned earlier how every year builds on itself, but if you take an extended break for 3 months, then you lose everything and you're starting back at square one. So the off season is very important for improving for the next season. And in the off season, that's when we build that endurance base, that aerobic base. That base training is very, very important. It's a good time to improve your fat metabolism, your fat-burning metabolism. So really focusing on the quality of your diet, eating fruits and vegetables and proteins, and decreasing the amount of carbohydrates that you're eating to teach your body to burn fat as a fuel more efficiently. So the off-season, very, very important for building that base for then making plans for the next season.
Awesome, Melissa. That's great stuff you just shared with us. Can you again tell us where people can get your information if they want to get in touch with you, check out your clinics, all that stuff?
My website is theempoweredathlete.com or empoweredathlete.com. All kinds of information on what I do, and I've got some great photos on my website, I must say. It's really it's fun to look at some of the photos there, because that's partly what I do with people, is I go and I use photography as a teaching and a coaching tool, but also I'm at the races watching, so I take a lot of photos and some really, really great photos on my website. But great information on how to improve your training, how to reach me, and also some nice little articles on learning more things about what training does for you and how to improve your training and racing.
Good deal. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on, and that's basically it. So that's tonight's call, and we will talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Great. Thank you, Carrie.